Hello, and welcome to episode 10, the Groundhog Edition of Notes from the Aisle Seat, the podcast that covers the arts in Northern Chautauqua County, sponsored by the 1891 Fredonia Opera House. My name is Tom Lockwood, and I'm your host as we bring you news and information about arts events at the Opera House and around the region, as well as interviews with artists and creators across the county. Hello, and welcome to episode 10, the Groundhog Edition of Notes from the Aisle Seat, the podcast that covers the arts in Northern Chautauqua County, sponsored by the 1891 Fredonia Opera House. My name is Tom Lockwood, and I'm your host as we bring you news and information about arts events at the Opera House and around the region, as well as interviews with artists and creators across the county. Hello, and welcome to episode 10, the Groundhog Edition of Notes from the Aisle Seat, the podcast that... Okay, I think I've taken that joke as far as I can. As of the recording of this episode, Groundhog Day hasn't actually arrived, so I can't tell you whether or not Dunkirk Dave saw his shadow. But I can tell you that festivals and holidays such as Groundhog Day celebrate the midwinter point, as from here on in, there will be less and less winter as spring approaches. The coming spring also means an uptick in arts activities in the region, and we'll be there to cover as many of them as we can. So stick around and let's get going. We'll start off with an overview of the coming season at the Department of Theater and Dance at SUNY Fredonia. Rehearsals are well underway for a variety of shows, and I got Professor Todd Proffitt, the Chair of Theater and Dance, to spend a few minutes with me to talk about what's going on and what's coming up. Todd, welcome to the podcast. It's good to have you on, finally.
It's great to be here.
That's good. I know that the semester is only about a week long or so, and I thought I would get you on to talk a little bit about what's coming up at the season at the for the Department of Theater and Dance and give everybody out there a little bit of a preview. So let's talk about each of the productions, and I know I'll probably be able to get directors, producers, whatever, of the individual shows as the season goes on. But it's always nice to know, like, what's coming up. So let's talk about the first one, which is, I believe, entitled Mr. Burns, a post-electric play.
Yes. This is interesting. It's a play with music. It's not technically a musical, but it's a play with music.
Okay.
Part of the reason we did choose it was to give some of our musical theater students more opportunities. But it's quite a fascinating piece. I haven't, I've only skimmed through it, but it's a play set in post-apocalyptic world, and they're trying to remember an episode of The Simpsons. It's the very specific Cape Fear episode, and it follows that play being produced in a couple different eras. So it's like, it's first when it's really close to after the apocalypse, so they remember a little more, but by the time you get to the end, we're many, many years away. So it's their interpretation of that episode. And it's got music written to it as well. I've been sitting in some of the design meetings and things like that. And it's interesting how the play is just going to expand in the space as we start to move along. But I think it's gonna be a lot of great opportunities for our student performers and designers.
Well, talk about the design elements of it, because I think that's probably the most interesting. What kind of who's doing the designing for it? What kind of world are they creating for this post-apocalyptic, post-electric play?
So the scenic designer for Mr. Burns is Carly Robinson, and she's a senior in our BFA. And then we have Madison Granger, who'll do the costumes, and Chris Mayer will be our lighting designer. And Michaela Canham will be our technical director. And I believe three out of the four of them are all graduating seniors. So this will be their final piece.
And can you give us an idea of what the visual look is going to, like, if when I walk into the theater, what am I going to see?
It's what I've seen so far is it's encompassing. There's going to be stuff on the walls, but think post-apocalyptic. And I know they're talking about a lot of props and stuff like that to sort of give it that feel. The costumes are going to be really interesting. There's a mask element in it. Huh. So they're going to be creating masks for the play. And again, these are of the Simpsons characters. So they're going to be interesting. They're going to be yellow.
You're going to be yellow. Wow. Okay. Yeah.
Well, and the other interesting piece is as well is when we talk about masks, we've got the masks specifically for the show, but we also have to perform in masks for safety reasons. So they're talking about incorporating some of that into the design.
So they can incorporate a COVID style mask into the mask for the character. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's quite a challenge. I mean, nobody would probably have to do that in normal times.
Yeah, it was interesting. Last semester, we performed the musical in clear masks, mm-hmm. and the same for A Normal Heart. What was interesting was I think in the Bartlett, which this show is going to be in the Bartlett Theater, the clear mask just sort of went away after a while. You just sort of forgot about them. And it was just so important with the close knit, you know, as close as that audience is, mm-hmm. you know, you need to see their facial expressions, you know, for the Marvel. Not quite as much. And with the musical last semester, I mean, that you were listening to the singing anyway, but I think they may be incorporating some of the clear masks in as well, but we want to keep everybody protected. So,
yeah. Yeah. I imagine just all overall, that's been quite a challenge through this whole year and the last 2 years, actually, really, when it's all came down in March of 2020, about what, 2 years ago, you've been working under these conditions.
Yeah. 2 years ago, we did a lot of things virtual. We filmed a lot of stuff. And then we did some streaming, which was interesting because we actually ended up getting some streaming revenue from it, which was sort of a thing we may experiment with going forward as well. But then this last year, we've been trying to go back to as much live theater as we can. The audiences have been okay. We're running about 50% houses, which from talking to the Rockefeller Arts Center, it seems to be the industry trend so far as everybody's running about 50%.
Yeah, I mean, I've been following the news too on Broadway and everything like that. And even though shows are trying to stay up, it's one thing to have the show running, but it's another thing to have enough a capacity to be able to pay the bills. I mean, that's a heck of a struggle for theaters across the country, not just here. All right, so Mr. Burns, we'll all mm-hmm. get to see the trying to recreate an episode of The Simpsons. That should be interesting. The next one that I see on your list is a production called Pipeline by Dominique Morisseau, and you have a guest director for this. Tell me a little bit about this one.
Okay. Again, this is a play that was fairly new to me. It's about an inner city school teacher and different struggles that they're going through. And we specifically were looking for a piece that could feature our global majority students. And this was one of the top sort of new plays. And so that was why we chose it. We also thought too that we needed to make sure we had a director from the global majority directing it mm-hmm. so that it was treated properly. So we did a search, and Yao Cahill is from Buffalo, and I think he's a graduate student at UB, but he's also worked with the Paul Robeson Theater as well, and he's got a great reputation. So we contracted him, and they're gonna start rehearsals in the next couple of weeks, I think, for this one. So
And it's in the Marvel Theater. How big is the cast?
It is so it's a cast of six.
Uh-huh.
And which is always interesting. I mean, I think doing that smaller cast play in a space like Marvel, it's always, you've got to find a way to sort of fill it up.
Sure.
We will be using projections. The plan is to use projections for the design.
Okay.
And we've already got that started. Alyssa Ferris is going to do that. It's going to be the scenic designer. Madeline Winter is going to do the costumes. Shay Posnick is going to do the lighting design, and Kelly Protz will be the sound designer, and Callan Britz, who is a local Fredonian, he's going to be doing the technical direction. But we're going to get to use our projectors, probably front projected stuff. I don't think we're doing any rear with this as well, but we're going to get to use our projectors that someone graciously helped us get, I don't know, a few years ago.
Yeah, we won't mention that clown.
No.
Good. Yeah. I'm glad to see they're getting some use though, because they're certainly learning how to run projectors is something that students need to have experience at.
Well, and as always, our number one rule for it is, does it fit the production? And it really does fit this production. We're going to be able to not only help help us scenically, but also help comment on the scenes as we go. And I think it's going to be an interesting approach to the production because of it.
Great. And then you, well, I hope I'll be able to get Yao as a, I'll have to contact him and see if I can get him when the time comes to get him on the podcast.
Okay.
Get more information. Oh yeah, it would be. And then finally, I guess from the main stage point of view, the Fredonia Dance Ensemble will be doing their annual concert at the end. Anything you know specifically about that?
We have two guest artists and well, technically it's three guest artists. We have two people doing one piece. And then what's great is Carlos Jones, who is, he's actually a dean at Buff State, is coming down and we're putting a piece on our students. He's a world renowned dancer and choreographer. And we got, because he's so close and he's good friends with some of our faculty, we're able to get him down to work with us. And then we've got another couple of people coming in. They're going to put a piece on our students. They're and then they're going to do a piece themselves. We're actually going to have them dance a piece for our concert. And then the other two will be Professor Peters and Professor Alterio. We're going to do a piece together, which we haven't had a collaboration like that, I think, since Helen Myers did a collaboration with Terry Beck a few years ago, which involved a lot of the faculty. And then Professor Alterio is going to do a piece that was originally slated for our COVID year. It was the year that we got things that it was just completely canceled. It's a piece called Gum, and he's going to reproduce it. So it'll be 2, 3, 4, 5 full pieces. I think I may be missing one in there, but it's going to be compact, but well worth it.
And that comes on the last weekend of the semester, I believe May 6th, 7th. And May 7th has a matinee as well as an evening performance. Is that, am I right there?
That is correct. That is correct. Okay. And we're toying with the idea of maybe if we can get it recorded, we want to put it on demand for a couple of days too. We did that last year. It was all dance pieces. And what we found was, a family who can't come see stuff can just go and get that recording. And then we get a couple of dollars from that and it helps support the rest of our season.
Anything else? I know it's audition season out there. How are you expecting audition season to go?
So far, very well. We had our first set of auditions this last weekend. We had musical theater acting. We were booked until like 3 o'clock. Next weekend, we have, I think it's dance, maybe musical theater and production. I know production design's doing it. So we're gonna have a big group coming in. We've been trying recently to, whenever we can, do as many of the programs we can in one day so that, we just have a big group of people coming and hanging out and create some excitement and buzz on the campus. But the really cool thing is because of COVID, most of our auditions, pretty much all of our auditions, there is a virtual option at some point during the year. And we're getting a lot more students from upstate. We're getting a lot more from downstate. We're getting a lot more students from out of state.
Wow.
Particularly the musical theater program, because they can do that virtual audition. It's easy. It's made it much, much easier, particularly in the middle of winter driving to Fredonia. I mean,
yeah, that was always a hassle. That was always a hassle. Well, good. Todd, listen, thanks a lot for giving me a time and giving us a preview of what's coming up. It looks like there's some real interesting things, three nice major productions coming up, and we'll be sure to get some information as each one comes up from the various directors and participants for sure. But thanks for the overview. Appreciate your time.
Anytime. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Todd. Bye-bye. If you want more information for these upcoming events, you can visit the Rockefeller Art Center website at www.fredonia.edu/RAC or check out the department's website. Lately, a variety of regional artists have been winning significant grants, which is another indication of the high quality of artists that work in the region. Recently, the Canada Council awarded Dr. Sarah Hamilton, professor of oboe in the School of Music at SUNY Fredonia, a $20,000 grant for new works for the oboe for her Can-Am Trio, so-called because it consists of both Canadian and American musicians. The other members are Ms. Anna Maddox, the American representative of the trio and English horn player for the Buffalo Philharmonic, and Dr. Geraldine Giovanetti, an oboist and faculty member at Brigham Young University in Salt Lake City, Utah. We all got together for a delightful conversation about the grant and the mystical quality of the oboe. Well, it's a great thrill and privilege to be able to welcome the Can-Am Trio to the podcast. And what I'm going to do is, rather than introduce each one of them, I'm going to let them introduce themselves so you can hear their voices, and they'll tell you who they are and what they play and a little bit of their bio. So, Sarah, why don't you start, please?
Hi. Okay. I am Sarah Hamilton, Dr. Sarah Hamilton, and I have been teaching at SUNY Fredonia for a long time. I've been in this area, but I am Canadian originally, hence the name of the trio. I'm an oboe player, and I not only teach at the college, but I play as the English horn player in the Erie Philharmonic, and I play in a variety of different area orchestras. I have subbed in the BPO as well, and enough about me.
Enough about me.
To other people.
Great. Let's hear about Anna Maddox.
Hi, I'm Anna Maddox. I play oboe and English horn with the Buffalo Philharmonic Orchestra, and I also teach at Buffalo State College. I'm originally from Syracuse, New York, so I'm the American part of this trio. But those of you who know the proximity of Buffalo to Canada know that I live 10 minutes away from Canada, and we go all the time. Pre-pandemic, we used to go all the time. Now it's a little bit more difficult, but still doable. And thrilled to be here. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And Geraldine Giovanetti.
Hi, I'm Geraldine Giovanetti, and I don't live in New York State. I live in the state of Utah. Sarah and I go way back. My very first job was playing in the Windsor Symphony in Ontario, and Sarah and I were the oboe section there, so we have a long association. Right now I'm teaching at Brigham Young University, where I've been for many years, and freelance a lot in Utah. And really interested in chamber music. I've been in a lot of different groups over the years, and that's how actually Sarah and Anna and I connected. I was playing with a group at Fredonia, and we met up there and had a nice connection. So so I'm Geraldine from Utah.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much, ladies. Now, you know, what precipitated me looking and having you on was that, Sarah, you won a grant for nearly $20,000. Is that $20,000 Canadian?
Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to check. It's still legal tender, but $20,000 Canadian from the Canada Council to commission some Canadian composers and do some new works. So tell me the story of that.
So we started to form the trio actually in the fall of 2019. And as you can imagine, we had set up some concerts. We had talked about rehearsing. The pandemic hit. And obviously we had to pivot. And the one thing that happened in the pandemic is that we had time to think and realized that one of our goals was to create new repertoire. While the oboe trio itself is an established ensemble, there isn't as much repertoire for this group as there are for, say, a woodwind quintet, you know, more standard chamber ensembles. So, writing a Canadian Council grant, given the Canadian and American flavor of our group, and given what seems very important to us now is to be having new compositions by living composers, by underrepresented composers, it just seemed like a excellent way forward. So we ended up connecting. I have some connections with Canadian composers right now, including one of them, Ron Royer, who actually taught at my high school, even though I wasn't there at that time. He taught after I was there. And we talked and we came, he actually was instrumental in sort of helping me put the grant together. We brought in Betsy Rahm, who is a Canadian composer and oboe player. Elizabeth Rahm is her full name. And another connection there is that Betsy and Geraldine go way back and have quite a history that I will let Geraldine talk about. And then we pulled in the third composer, Shreya Ya, who is an alumna of my high school and also has connections with Ron. It all works fairly easily, actually.
Oh, that's good. That's nice. It sounds like a great synergy. Anna, how did you get mixed up with these Canadians?
Well, so, right. I mean, that's the question. How are we making this trio work when we live kind of differently geographically? So I literally just got a text message, I believe, from Sarah one day saying, hey, I'm thinking about starting this new trio with Jerry. Are you interested? And I said yes, because I'm on board for new stuff all the time, and I love these ladies. I'd actually only met Jerry one time, but all it takes is once. Mm-hmm. And so that's how I got on board. So when the grant came in, it was, I have to say, for all of us, it was kind of a big surprise. But at the same token, I believe that my text response to getting the grant was, well, of course we got it. It was meant to be, all of it. So it was meant to be that they asked me to play with them, and it was meant to be that we got this grant and that we are really going to push forward on creating some new art for this ensemble, which is fabulous.
And Geraldine, how do you manage to stay in touch with the distance? Has something like Zoom or anything like that helped you just to keep in contact or anything along those lines?
Not really for the plane. I mean, the plane really had to happen in person. Mm-hmm. And so, we gathered a lot of music. We have a great music library out here, and that was super helpful. And we're all quite familiar with the repertoire just because we're all oboists and English hornists. So once we gathered the repertoire together, then it was really just a matter of getting together and playing through things. And as soon as we started to play, we knew what repertoire we liked and what would work and how to put a program together and what was important to us as a group.
I'm going to go back to you, Anna, real quick, because I know that not only are you the only American, but you play the English horn as opposed to the oboe. So, you have these two different things going. What's the difference between the two instruments, between the English horn and the oboe? I'm guessing you probably play the oboe as well. But
I do, yes. And so all English hornists play the oboe, but not all oboists play English horn. So all instruments come in families, and the most familiar family for most people is strings. So you have violin, viola, cello, and bass. But the oboe has a family as well. And so it's oboe d'amour, English horn, and bass oboe. So the oboe is the soprano, the oboe d'amour is the alto. The English horn is actually the tenor instrument. So it's a good deal larger than the oboe. And I have to make separate reeds for the English horn that are different from oboe reeds. And I gradually discovered, actually over several years, that the instrument just fit me a little bit better. My physical self just resonates with the larger instrument better. And technically, I can do things on the English horn that are not as easy for me on the oboe. It's actually easier for me to play fast and virtuosically and things like that on the English horn than it was for me on oboe. But I'm still a good oboist, and I still keep my hand in. And in the orchestra, I play absolutely both instruments pretty regularly.
Well, now, Sarah, now you have to explain to me, what is it about the sound of the oboe and the English horn together what's that blend kind of eventually going to sound like in terms of the works that you're going to produce?
Well, I think it is as yet a a not fully developed sound, actually. So I'm looking forward to the composers creating and exploring that. I think because as a section we've played orchestrally for however many years, you know, for a long time, the English horn's been a part of the orchestra, that there is a sound for that section, and the English horn adds a bass to our section. The English horn, though, is, you know, there's some really famous, beautiful English horn solos in the orchestra, and as common as it is, it's still not as common as the oboe, and I think it has a certain cachet with the audiences that is quite something. In this trio, it still has that. It maybe functions a little bit differently in this trio. I think Anna could probably speak to that, but the sound of us all together in a trio, I think it's magical, personally. I really like oboe ensemble kinds of sounds. I think there are stereotypes out there that are not true or fair. I think it sounds terrific together.
Well, you know, I was actually going to ask Geraldine about that. That you know, when people say, when you say to people, yes, I play the oboe, what kind of reaction do you usually get?
Well, often they confuse it with another instrument. Most often, I think the clarinet, or, you know, and to be fair, sometimes when people say to me, what is an oboe, I'll say, well, you know what a clarinet is, it looks similar. So, you know, it's this vicious cycle of being confused with the maybe more popularly known instrument. But, you know, the oboe, of course, has ancient roots, and it can be very evocative and mystical, but it can also be really impish, and it can have spectacular technique. I mean, it doesn't necessarily need to be pigeonholed as an instrument that's just there for a different quality of sound.
Sarah, give me some idea of you know, this touring. Where are you going? I know you're going to play at Fredonia. I know you're going to play a concert here at Fredonia in a couple of weeks. Where else are you traveling?
Well, the night before Fredonia, we're going to play at Buff State.
Mm-hmm.
And on Friday, we're going to be playing at Kent State.
Mm-hmm. What's the date, Friday?
Friday, 18th.
Friday the 18th, February 18th, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So the 16th in Rausch at 8 o'clock, the 15th at Buff State at 7:30.
Yes.
And which Anna has arranged. Yep. And then we will be going to Kent State on the 18th.
Ladies, thank you very much for coming on. I do appreciate the opportunity to talk to all of you. And any last words, Sarah?
I appreciate that you took the time and saw that this was happening. And I'm just so glad that you're interested and we can get the word out. And I'm really excited. We're really excited to play this music for everyone. And as oboist, to play oboe music and oboe trio music, and for the oboe to be as well known as possible, because we also all agree after all this time, it's still such an incredible, wonderful instrument.
Annie, you got gigs coming up at the Buffalo Philharmonic?
Absolutely. So just last night we finished the music of Star Trek versus Star Wars. That was lots of fun. The audience enjoyed it a lot. This next week we have Beethoven 7 and Rachmaninoff Piano Concerto. Oh, the one with the Paganini themes. Sorry, I can't remember the number on that one. And a piece by an up-and-coming composer named Jessie Montgomery. She's absolutely fabulous. I love her music.
Good. Excellent. And Geraldine, what about you?
Just really right now, completely gearing up for coming out to New York State. It's just less than 2 weeks away. I'll be there, and looking forward to all of the concerts in that area. And we hope that the podcast, your great podcast, will generate some audience for us. We look forward to meeting people in the area.
Well, the podcast is a little bit young, and I don't know how great it is. But I'm doing my damnedest to try to raise awareness of all of these kinds of arts in the area, because you believe it or not, there's quite a lot going on between the Opera House and the college and a couple of other places in Northern Chautauqua. So thank you once again, ladies, for taking the time to come on. And we'll look forward to seeing all of you at the concert.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you. You'll be able to hear the Can-Am Trio in concert playing one of their new compositions at the Rausch Recital Hall on Wednesday, February 16th at 8 p.m. Admission is free. Here's what else is going on in the region for the next 2 weeks. The cinema series at the 1891 Fredonia Opera House continues with two heartwarming family dramas. Come On, Come On features Joaquin Phoenix as a radio journalist who ends up taking care of his 8-year-old nephew as they journey together from Los Angeles to New York to New Orleans. Written and directed by Academy Award nominee Mike Mills, Come On, Come On screens on Saturday, February 5th, and again on Tuesday, February 8th at 7:30 p.m. The second film, The Tender Bar, directed by George Clooney and starring Ben Affleck, Ty Sheridan, and Christopher Lloyd, tells the coming-of-age story of a young boy mostly raised by his uncle, who runs a local tavern as he pursues his romantic and professional dreams. The Tender Bar screens on Saturday, February 12th, and again on Tuesday, February 15th at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are available online at www.fredopera.org/tickets or by calling the box office at 716-679-1891. The Fredonia Showcase continues its exhibition of student artwork at the Marion Art Gallery until Sunday, February 13th. Gallery hours are Tuesday through Thursday, 12 to 4, Friday and Saturday, 12 to 6, and Sunday from 12 to 4 p.m. The Western New York Chamber Orchestra, under the baton of Maestro Glenn Cortese, will present its next concert, entitled Classics No. 2, on Saturday, February 12th at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are available online through the campus box office at www.fredonia.edu/tickets or by calling the campus box office at 716-673-3501. Guest tenor J.R. Frolic will perform a recital of works by Schumann, Rachmaninoff, Hollander, Rudolf Nelson, and Irving Berlin in Rausch Recital Hall on Sunday, February 13th at 4 p.m. Admission is free. And finally, the Paris Island Marine Band's Iron Mike Rock Ensemble will perform at King Concert Hall on Tuesday, February 15th at 7:30 p.m. This free concert is sponsored by the Dunkirk Evening Observer and the Jamestown Post-Journal. See their full-page ad in the January 29th, 30th edition for information and coupon for free tickets. If you'd like your arts event mentioned on the podcast, just send us an email at operahouse@fredopera.org. Please allow 4 weeks advance notice for a timely mention. If the names Jerry Mahoney, Danny O'Day, Lamb Chop, or Charlie McCarthy mean anything to you, then two things are probably true. One, you're probably as old as I am. And two, you're a fan of ventriloquism. The Kaleidoscope Family Series at the Rockefeller Art Center is bringing to the region one of the best ventriloquists working today. Ms. Lynn Tresker has been displaying her skill at throwing her voice since she was 9 and is now in demand across the country. I had the chance to speak with her, as well as with a special guest star who just happened to show up. So it's great to welcome to the podcast Lynn Tresker. She'll be performing at the Rockefeller Art Center coming up on February 4th. If you're listening to this podcast anytime after that, too bad, you missed a great act. So Lynn, welcome to the podcast. Great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, you bet. So let me start off by saying that I am a sucker for two things in life. One of them is close table magic card tricks, like when someone comes up and does that in front of me, because I just, my eyes pop open like a 5-year-old.
Right.
And the other thing is ventriloquism. When I was growing up, now I'm going to date myself now. So, but of course, you know, must see television back in my day was the Ed Sullivan Show. And I saw many of the from the 50s perform from Sherry Lewis to Paul Winchell, and of course the
Edgar Bergen
and Charlie McCarthy, you know, I still can do the theme, N-E-S-T-L-E-S, Nestle's Make the Very.
Oh, Jimmy Nelson.
Yes, Jimmy Nelson, with Far From the Dog. So, you know, that's my kind of my childhood. So when I see ventriloquism, I go, that's one of the things that makes my eyes open really wide. So now you have to tell me how ventriloquism hooked you.
How did I get started? When I was 9, I received my first little puppet for Christmas. I actually didn't know what a ventriloquist was. I was just looking through a Sears catalog around Christmas time, and I saw this little dummy. And I think being 9, I felt I was too old for dolls and I was too young for other things. So I asked my mom, what is that? My mom was like, oh, that's a ventriloquist dummy, and you know, make it talk. I'm like, that's what I want. And we even have, you know, Christmas Day, the 8mm, you know, movie of me with my first little dummy. And so I was very shy when I was little. So when I had this puppet, I picked it up fairly easily. I mean, I did a lot of practice, but, the attention was taken off of me and it was put on this dummy, and I found out I can get away with saying things that normally I get in trouble for,
right.
You know, just, I had the little smart aleck side of me came out through this, you know, this little dummy Simon. So I started, I just played around with it and I carried around, I practiced, and it was just a fun little hobby. And how I started performing, I was about 10, so it was within the year. A friend of my parents, he was a square dance caller, you know, that swing your partner around and around, a square dance caller. So he saw me play around with it once, and he said, wow, you know, told my parents, she's really talented. He goes, why don't you make up a little 10-minute routine, and I'll take her to my square dances, and she can do a little, you know, 10-minute routine during the intermissions. And like, oh, okay. I didn't know what an intermission was. You know, like, okay, I guess I'm doing intermissions. People are asking, what did you do? I'm doing intermission shows. So I had this little dummy and this little lamb puppet, and I sang, you know, I'm an old cowhand, and told little jokes, and from there it just snowballed. Started doing, you know, at the age of 10, I started doing shows at birthday parties and nursing homes and hospitals and schools, and so I've been working literally since I was 10 years old.
Wow.
And then after 6 to 8 months of doing those kind of shows, you're like, oh, you can get paid for this. So my first paid show was $5. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did it all through grade school. I did it all through, you know, high school. Then I put myself through a year and a half of college. So now I'm still performing throughout. And then when I was in college, that's where my agents, Dan and Jerry Abrahamson, they're with DCA Productions. So they heard of me, and they saw me perform, and they asked if I'd be interested in working the college market, working, you know, doing shows at the colleges and universities, and working on cruise ships as well. So I was about 19, 20 years old, my second year of college, and I had to make a decision. I was going to take a year off and travel and do these, you know, college performances and work on cruise ships and save up more money so I could put myself through school. And it just pretty much took off from there, you know, so never went back.
Right.
So, yeah, I spent my 20s and 30s doing shows at colleges and campuses throughout the country. So that was my... Yeah, that was my bread and butter for a while, and as well as cruise ships. So I worked. I would spend a month to a month and a half on a cruise ship. So at a young age, it was great because I got to see the world. You know, I've been to places I never would have been able to. Because once you're settled and you're married and start a family and all that, obviously you don't have time to go visit Europe and, you know, Russia and places that, you know, I never would have been able to unless I worked on a ship.
Is there any particular ventriloquist that had a major influence on you when you first saw him or her?
Everybody has. I love watching Paul Winchell. I mean, Paul Winchell to me is extremely talented, the voices and the characters. And every ventriloquist that I know, yeah, they have their own style. They have their own way of doing things. You can see one ventriloquist and then see another one, and they might do something similar, but they each have their own way of doing it, their own style, their own character. So I think I take something away from Jeff. Jeff Dunham, I've known since I was 12. You know, there's a ventriloquist convention that we go to. So right. I met him at the age of 12. So we've known each other for a really long time. And just to watch him go from a performer to this megastar, you know, it's amazing. And the other popular one that everybody knows now is Darcy Lynn Farmer. So, you know, to see her, you know, I saw her when she was 12 years old, and then she just blossomed in this, you know, she's amazingly talented, and just to see her grow in just such a short amount of time. I wouldn't say I have a favorite. I enjoy watching different ones and their different styles.
Are there any, am I allowed to ask trade secrets? Like what's the mechanism for throwing your voice and all of that? Or do you like not give that away?
No, I mean, ventriloquism, you can Google it, but ventriloquism, you can Google anything. Ventriloquism is actually, ventri is belly, and loqui means to speak. So it's actually, that comes from belly talk. So people used to think the voices came from your belly. Ventriloquism is actually using different letters in the alphabet to substitute for the ones that you literally have to move your lips for.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, if I was going to say a B word, not the B word, but I was going to say a B word. I would use, you normally have to close your lips for that, but I would use a soft D sound. So instead of saying, you know, baby, I'm saying baby. So it's come out as baby. So it's just a different way of using those letters to substitute. So a PH or a P sound is actually a soft T sound, as in, yes, yeah, so if you're saying pizza, you're saying pizza.
Oh, pizza. Okay. And, yeah. and the ear can't hardly pick that up, really.
It can if you're really, really listening. Or sometimes, there are certain combinations that are harder to say, like a BR combination is pretty difficult. So you have to say it slowly. Barbara. Yeah. So it's using the tongue is forming all your letters. And M is an N sound.
Mm-hmm.
So, but here's the thing. And also in a good ventriloquist, every time you do a show or every time I would do a show, people start watching me. So they know that they go, oh, she's a ventriloquist. Let's see if her lips are moving. But then the illusion is having that puppet come to life. So, you know, people are looking at a puppet and talking to a puppet that, you know, it's, I have, you know, grown adults up on stage with me and they don't look at me. They don't talk to me. They're talking to the puppet. It's just that whole illusion of like, they know that it's not real, but they're not looking at me or talking to me, you know, and that's when you know that you're doing a good job, when they're like conversing one-on-one with the puppet, you know.
Do you have one of those little puppets there I can interview?
Or? I have my little favorite one. I'll bring her out.
Oh, so she's great. The
this would be this is Chloe. Let me go get her.
Chloe,
what are we doing?
This is Chloe. Hi Chloe. How
hi,
are you?
What are we doing?
Oh, we're doing.
That? That's Tom. That's Tom.
Yeah, this is Chloe.
Hi Chloe.
Can people see me, or is this going to be on audio?
It's just going to be on audio, Chloe.
Oh, you can move your lips, Lynn. Okay, thanks. So, I'm Chloe, and I'm this nanny. They can't see you. I'm three. No, you're. Oh, I'm four. No, you're three. I'm three. Yeah, I'm holding up four fingers because I'm a puppet. Yeah.
Well, we only have
four fingers.
I was going to say that's all you have, so, Chloe. What happens when you become five?
Oh, I don't get five. Am I five?
Yeah.
One of these days I'll be five. But I've been three for about 10 years. You know.
Well,
so this is Chloe.
Chloe, you're delightful. When did you first come?
I was made this way. What?
when did you first come about, Chloe? I mean, when were you first like?
I don't know. Where did I first come from?
Well, where did I get you?
Yeah, where did you get me?
Yeah.
Okay, you can talk.
So, Chloe, this must have been about 16, 17 years ago.
Oh, I must be that old.
Yeah. No, there's still four, and Chloe.
I think I'm wearing the same dress. Yeah.
So, when I first started, I got my first job working for Disney Cruise Line, and I knew I needed. At the time, I was doing a lot of comedy clubs and colleges. And when I first got the job working for Disney Cruise Line, I'm like, I need something, you know, for kids or families. And at our ventriloquist convention, we have, we have a dealer's room. So people sell puppets and things like that. So I saw this one and I go, oh, she's kind of cute in an ugly sort of way.
I'm ugly? No, you're cute. I'm cute.
Yeah. So I just picked her up and
here we go. Yeah. I go on the potty.
Yeah. And that's how it started.
That's right. I go on the potty.
Yeah, okay. So, and the reason that's her big thing is because I had a 3-year-old at home who was potty trained.
Oh.
So a lot of Chloe's quotes, my quotes, yeah. A lot of the things she says have literally been, you know, things that my kids have said or have done.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I see. So you sort of have the whole history of motherhood in you, Chloe.
Well, yeah, my dad, you got a beard.
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
My daddy has a scratchy beard. Feels like mommy's legs.
Yeah.
Can I get gum?
Well, no, I'll talk.
I like gum.
I know you like gum.
Yeah. Can I get gum? No, please. I eat all my lunch.
Well, that's good.
Even my mommy cooks. Sometimes I don't like when my mommy cooks.
No.
I like when my daddy cooks.
What does daddy make?
McDonald's. Yeah. Is that funny?
Yes, Chloe, because it's true.
Yes, Chloe, that's funny.
Uh-huh.
That's funny.
So those are literally two things that my kids have said. We like when you cook, Mom, but we love when daddy cooks.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful.
Yeah. So that's she's one of my favorites.
Yeah. I have fun.
Yeah. She's a lot of fun.
That's good. That's good. Wonderful.
Are you going to my show?
I probably will. Yeah.
I'm gonna do a show. Yeah.
Yeah. I heard on you're going to do a show.
Friday.
In my hometown on the 4th of February. Right.
What's it called? Fredonia. You where you live, yeah.
Yes. Yes, Fredonia.
I'm not gonna drive.
No, oh
you're not
no!
Gonna drive there. I'll drive there. Thing.
You drive.
I will drive there.
Okay, I'm not gonna drive.
No, you're not gonna drive.
Okay, but I'll be there.
Yeah.
That's
Who
good.
Else is gonna be there? My grandpa. My grandpa. He doesn't have hair.
Yeah. Well. No. There you go, Chloe.
No, because when you get bigger, it goes back into your head.
Oh.
And yeah. And then it comes out your ears.
I'm going to be far away in the audience. I'm not sure I'm going to want to be close
I
enough.
Still
to get
see
up
you with the other shiny head, though. Because then the light's going to come down on your head. It'll be so bright.
Be nice.
So maybe if you come to my show,
our show, yeah,
they can be on stage.
That's true.
You're gonna
did you move your lips when you said that?
I hope not.
Glad this is not on video.
I know.
She's not moving her lips, Chloe. I can tell. It's a lot of fun. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, Chloe, unfortunately, I think we're going to have to bring this to an end because I could do this.
Why?
Because I could do this for an hour, but I've only got
I like, know.
you know, 45 or 50 minutes on my podcast, you know.
It's long.
Yeah.
It's my nap time anyway.
Yeah, well, I know you're going to be the biggest hit on the podcast, so yeah. Good night, Chloe.
Night, Mr. Tom.
Well, thank you. Oh, God. Lynn, thank you so much.
Hey, thank you.
Oh, God, that's hysterical.
That was fun.
Yeah.
And nobody could see my lips move either.
Nobody can see your lips move. That's the best part about audio. See, nobody can see your lips. That's wonderful. Well,
it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I just know I haven't had anything this funny on my podcast in a few episodes I've done, so it's just going to be great. I really appreciate the time. Yeah, this is obviously going to be a fun show. Thank you for coming down and safe driving,
thank you,
please.
Tom.
Okay.
I will. Thanks again.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hopefully you'll hear this podcast in time to catch Lynn's performance in King Concert Hall at the Rockefeller Arts Center on Friday, February 4th at 7:30 p.m. It's sure to be a great event for the whole family. If you're listening to this podcast after the show has already come and gone, let that be a lesson to you. Have your favorite podcast app set to download each episode right on time every other Wednesday throughout the year. And that's it for this Groundhog edition of Notes from the Aisle Seat. My thanks to Todd Proffitt, the Can-Am Trio members Sarah Hamilton, Anna Maddox, and Geraldine Giovanetti, as well as Lynn Trefsker and Chloe for being my guests on this episode. Notes from the Aisle Seat is a production of the 1891 Fredonia Opera House in Fredonia, New York. For more information on any of the Opera House's events, call the box office at 716-679-1891. Visit the website at www.fredopera.org or email at operahouse@fredopera.org. Notes from the Aisle Seat is now available wherever you get your podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. If you like this podcast, please consider following us by clicking the follow button on our website and spreading the word through your social media feeds. If you have an arts event you'd like to get featured on the podcast, why don't you drop us a line at operahouse@fredopera.org and we'll see about featuring your event. Please try to give us a month's advance notice if possible to facilitate timely scheduling. We'll return in 2 weeks on February 16th, 2022. I'm Tom Laughlin, and until then, be safe out there and be kind to one another.
And the yummiest nestlings make the very best.
Your grace.